Welcome to another episode of By His Grace Podcast. Today, I am excited to bring my new friend, Kristen Welch, to you. Kristen is the founder of Mercy House Global and Fair Trade Friday. She is a wife and a mom and an author. She's written several books, including Rhinestone Jesus, Raising Grateful Kids, Raising World Changers, and now she has a new book, Made to Move Mountains. So did I get all of that right, Kristen?
That was perfect. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, welcome to By His Grace today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, Misty. I'm excited to dig in and talk about the struggles in life.
Yeah. So let's start with the small little project that you work on at Mercy House Global. So tell us how that kind of all came about and what does that look like?
Well, I started blogging in 2007, which feels like decades ago in the blogging world. And that journey led me to travel to Nairobi, Kenya with Compassion International in 2010. To take basically my blog to a third world country and write about poverty. At the time, that was the biggest yes of my life, just leaving my comfort zone and my everyday normal. And Mercy House Global is a direct response from being wrecked on that trip and just understanding that the everyday normal of the global poor isn't the same as my normal. And it impacted it in such a way that I could not be the same once I returned. And Mercy House is really that response to what God showed me on that trip. And we have maternity homes in Nairobi, Kenya, is where we started in 2010. We have an indigenous staff there. We've rescued 55 teens between the ages of 12 and 16 who've gotten pregnant through trafficking or exploitation. And we have residential centers there. About 6 years ago, in the process of replacing undignified work with dignified work, we discovered that when you take away a job from a trafficked individual, you also take away their opportunity to provide for themselves. And so dignified work really became our heartbeat. So we have retail stores in America. We have a large subscription club called Fair Trade Friday, where we provide opportunities for employment for women around the world in over 30 countries now. We work with 100 groups of women to provide jobs for them. And then we sort of just are in the middle, connecting women who don't have with women who do have. And so that's what Mercy House is. And we use all the money from all the product we sell to support those maternity centers in Kenya. And really everything about what I just said has changed my life in every area, from parenting to my marriage to my writing. It's given me a lot of purpose and a lot of joy and a lot of struggles. It's a big mountain to climb, but I think I've never been more content. Because I need Jesus a lot, a whole lot.
Yeah. But you know what? We all need Jesus a lot. Mm-hmm. whether we realize it or not, we all need him a lot. So, let's talk about that a little bit more. How has this mission with Mercy House Global, how has it affected your faith?
Oh my goodness. I think I had a moment in a slum in Kenya, where I came face to face with the Jesus I'd been following my whole life. And it destroyed everything I thought I knew about God. And, you know, I grew up in church and have done all the Bethmore Bible studies and, you know, listen to Christian music. And I have that, you know, I do all the good things that Christians do. But I was really a very empty Christian. I had a lot of faith, but not a lot of action, a lot of resources, but very little obedience. And so saying yes to God to saying yes to something that was so much bigger than me, that made me desperate for Jesus, has changed every part of my faith. I remember standing in a slum and being so angry at God that it overwhelmed me. And I had never felt anger in that way at God before, just, you know, trying to reconcile the head knowledge of who I thought Jesus was. He loves all the children. He created the world, you know, all the Bible songs too. I'm standing in a slum with people he created and he loves, and they have no access to daily bread. And it was hard for me to bring the two together. God, if you love your people, why do they live this way? And the minute I asked God that question, he asked me the same question. You live in the global north. You have opportunity. You spend the days when your kids are at school shopping. You're living an empty life. What are you going to do about what you've seen? And so my faith that day, it fell apart and it simultaneously came together. Because what I realized is I had added Jesus to my life like salt and pepper to a meal. I had flavored my life with Christianity, but I didn't have a Jesus-centered home. I had a good home, a faith home, a loving home. We were intentional, but it was all about my family. Everything we did was for us. It wasn't for anyone else. And the cycle of hopelessness and being discontent and acquiring more and more and more of the American dream, I just felt emptier and emptier. And so on that day, I came face to face with the Son of God. And it reminds me, I was just reading this morning about the rich young ruler. And I'm so compelled by his story because I see myself in the rich young ruler. When he came face to face with the Son of God, and he was desperate for purpose and meaning because he had everything, but he had nothing. And Jesus said to him, give it all away and follow me. And he walked away unchanged. What he should have done at the impossible request of Jesus. Jesus asked us to do impossible things. So many times we hear his voice say, do this. And we say, we turn away. We walk away because it is impossible. I think if the rich young man had just fallen on his knees and said, Jesus, this is too hard. I can't. Help me. Yeah. Help me. And so that's what happened to me that day. I came face to face with Jesus, and he has asked me to do something impossible, and I can't do it on my own. And so I fall on my knees every day. And I'm like, Jesus, help me. Please help me do this because I can't do it on my own. And that's how I live now, you know, asking God to be made strong in my weakness and to be glorified in my inadequacy and to keep asking me to do hard things for him, because that is where I have found my joy and purpose in saying yes.
Wow. There's so much there, Kristen. I just, as you were talking, I kept thinking of the song that says, give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so that I can see everything that I've been missing. Like, I think that in our very comfy, cushy American church culture, we are blind, and we don't even know that we're blind. Mm-hmm. We've been given so much, yet we... And I'm speaking of myself too. You know, I'm guilty of it as well. And so I just really appreciate your heart and your obedience. And I know that that's not easy to do, but it's like, there's nothing better than that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I really feel like we're deceived in a way that, I think one of the biggest realizations for me was I have always felt blessed. And I think we call ourselves blessed in North America, and we are, right? We have access to opportunity, education, daily bread. But we're only blessed. And this is what the Lord has really revealed to me personally, is I can only call myself blessed if I share what I've been given. If I keep it to myself, I'm selfish.
Yeah.
You know, hashtag selfish hanging on our wall isn't nearly as cute decor as hashtag blessed, right? Right. But it's the truth. I mean,
it is.
We take and get so much of everything, all of the things that we have opportunities to receive, but we were meant to be a conduit. we were meant to keep our hands open, whatever God places in our hands, whether it's talent, time, resources, whatever he gives us as a gift. Gifts were meant to be given. And when we hold on to those things, we're miserable because we weren't intended to have things that were meant to be given away. And so I would say, back to your question on faith, I'm still peeling back the layers of that right there, of what does it look like to truly be blessed? And it's not what our world says it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, all throughout the scriptures, everything is backwards in Jesus's economy, right? Blessed are those who mourn. Like, that doesn't make sense to us, right? But bless, you know, the first will be last and the last will be first. And so, and we only have one go round on this earth, and none of us know how long we're going to be here.
Right.
And how terrible we would feel if we get to the end of this life and we're only here to serve ourselves.
And it's all burned up.
That's right. We were talking about this past weekend about, you know, everything that's not done for Jesus, it's wood, hay, and stubble. Only the things that are done for the Lord will last. And that includes loving his people, which is what you do through Mercy House Global. We were also talking about, you know, you're working here locally in the Houston area with refugees coming in. And so how does that tie into what you're doing now?
Oh my goodness. We've been doing Mercy House for 10 years now, 10 years this month. And I've learned a ton. I've learned so much. I've gotten an education the hard way. And I've stepped into this struggle, but it's not gotten easier. There hasn't been an easy season. And this past year, just after a real tough year personally and with my family, and I was feeling very burned out, I woke my husband up in the middle of the night, and I just had this, like, I needed to say something and I needed to say it to him. And he was, of course, groggy and unprepared, but I cried out and I just said, I want an easy year. I want one year that's easy. And my husband did not speak the words that I wanted to hear back, but he said what needed to be said. And sometimes, you know, God speaks in mysterious ways. He said, we have purposefully made our lives difficult to make the lives of others easy. And it's not biblical to want an easy life. And it's human and it's okay to confess that and say it, but the expectation that following Jesus will be easy is, it is not gospel truth.
No.
And I turned over and was mad at him and let those words really seep into my heart. And God started something really beautiful in me, and he's used refugees to, it sounds dramatic, but in a lot of ways, everything in my life is very Christian-y, right? I work at a Christian nonprofit. I'm very involved in my local church. I'm raising my kids to follow Jesus. All my friends are believers. And I think what I didn't realize had happened is I am not, on a daily basis, I don't know a lot of people who need Jesus, who live in darkness, who haven't been exposed to truth. And so welcoming refugees into my city and meeting them at the airport and being in their house every single week since August has literally saved me in a way I cannot describe, because it's allowed me to take the light of Jesus into a dark place. Not as I haven't fixed any problems. I haven't, no one has gotten saved. But it's reminded me how desperate the world needs Jesus and how much I need to be letting my light shine in darkness, and how that has created a desperation. I pray for the lost more. I ask God for miracles every day. I believe that my Muslim friends will one day come to know Jesus. I mean, it's just, it's made me alive again. And it's provided really great work for them. We have a candle line. We pick up about 500 candles a week from refugees in Houston, and a soap line, thousands of bars of soap every week from these different refugee families. So it's provided a lot of dignity for them. It's provided income that they need as they're trying to resettle here in a totally new foreign world. But they have helped me way more than I've helped them, because at the end of the day, loving our neighbors and loving God is what it's all about.
That's right.
And if we're not doing those two things, we're not going to have what we so desperately try to fill in our lives and seek after, and, you know, contentment, purpose, all those things are found in the golden rule of loving God and loving others more than we love ourselves. And so it has literally been life-giving for me in such a real way.
That is absolutely what it's all about. Well, I want to ask you this one final question. If you were to sit face to face with someone today who had a mountain in front of them, whatever that mountain is, it could be anything and it could be unknown. What encouragement would you give them at, you know, maybe God's calling them to step out and do something big? Maybe they've just received a difficult diagnosis, or they've prayed for something for a long time and God has not changed the situation. We talk about all different kinds of struggles, but what encouragement would you offer those people today?
Well, first I would say there is going to be a mountain in your way. There's going to be something unexpected around the bend. There's going to be something unplanned in our journey. There are going to be mountains that we do not want to climb. There are going to be mountains we do want to climb, dreams that are tiny seeds that God has planted that we long to see fulfilled. We think about them. For both of those kinds of mountains, I would say the same thing, and that is take the first right step that's in front of you. Take the next step, whatever that looks like, whether it's just saying it out loud, defining it, writing it in a journal. What is the next right thing for you? And, you know, back to what you were saying about living in this upside down kingdom, we have really bought into this supersize mentality that to do something kingdom minded, it has to be big. And I am living proof that what I'm doing looks big, but it did not start out big. It started with one tiny step. And that tiny step led me to the next tiny step. I mean, it's embarrassing and shocking how small those steps were. They were insignificant in the grand scope of what I'm doing today. But there is this surrender that comes when we position ourselves at the foot of a mountain and Jesus says, "This is what I want you to do. I want you to climb." Mm. And we're like the rich young ruler who looks at that gigantic mountain in front of us, that disease, that diagnosis, divorce, drama, that epic dream that is literally, we don't have the resources to climb it. We have a choice, just like the rich young ruler. We can turn away and walk away unchanged from that mountain and continue the rest of our life seeking what is missing. Or we can fall on our knees and say, "Jesus, I can't, I don't know how to take that next step. It's too big. It's too hard." But sometimes that's the first step, admitting that we can't do it on our own, that we need Jesus to make it clear what the next step is. And there's no formula for climbing a mountain. There's no resource guide. I've looked. I mean, there's not. I was telling our staff at Mercy House the other day, we're not necessarily doing it wrong because what we're doing hasn't been done before. So when you're a pioneer, you're figuring it out. And most of what we've learned has been by doing it the wrong way first, right? Mistakes are the best education oftentimes. And so it's not about doing it right or wrong. It's about doing it.
Yeah.
Right. So that question of what do I do? What is the next, you know, let's say you make the best chocolate chip cookie in the world. I mean, you know, the world needs your chocolate chip cookie and you want to open a bakery and I mean, make chocolate chip cookies, right? And share them with people. What is, I mean, it could be so small and seem dumb, but those little steps, because of the way the kingdom works. I mean, think of the loaves and fishes. That little boy's lunch was pathetic compared to the need, but he offered what he had. It was not enough. What we have to climb the mountains in front of us is not enough. It's impossible, but God doesn't expect us to have all the answers. He expects us to offer what he's placed in our hands as a sacrifice. Lay it down, Jesus. It's not enough fish. It's not enough bread. You do the impossible with it. When we can do that, what happens is the miraculous unfolds. But people see God instead of us because they know that a person could do what God can do. And then it becomes holy ground. That altar where we place that sacrifice becomes holy ground because we've given it to God and he has seen the obedience in our inadequacy and he does the miracle.
I love all of that, Kristen. Well, you have a book that's coming out called Made to Move Mountains. And so tell us a little bit about that book and we're going to close with that today.
Yeah, it's Made to Move Mountains, How God Uses Our Dreams and Our Disasters to Accomplish the Impossible. I signed the contract for that book 3 years ago, not knowing that my life was going to, I didn't know what was around the bend. And so I thought I was going to write a book that was just this big cheerleader in your ear. Climb the mountain. Everyone was made to move a mountain. And it is that, but it's also the most raw, grief-filled writing I've ever done because I'm on mountains I don't want to be on and they're not, I'm still climbing and I can't wrap up a book project in a neat, tidy bow because life is a struggle. So I think it's for those who want to climb, who dream of doing something for the kingdom, and it's for those who are literally trying to survive. And so that's probably for everyone.
Yeah.
It's a book for everyone.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story and encouraging us with your words. And thank you for just the example of the way that you love, because really that's what it's all about. And so thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Misty.
Thank you for joining me today on By His Grace. I hope you've enjoyed listening and are encouraged by our guest today. I would love for you to visit my blog, mistyphillip.com, for more encouragement. You can find me on social media as Misty Philip, and I would love to connect with you there.